Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, dear listeners. My name is Nick Hart. This is the platform of Akdong Millwall. I want to welcome you to Oztung Millwall, from Sydney to the Swan River, from Van Diemen's Land to the shores of Darwin and the Great Northern Territories. This show is produced by Jimmy Webb in Perth and is dedicated to all Millwall fans who have made the trip to the great southern continent, known by some as Terra Australis. Now, if you're living down under and interested in keeping in touch with fellow Millwall fans, please do get in touch with our Akdong email, akdongmillwall@gmail.com, or via Twitter at akdongmillwall, or indeed with Jimmy direct. He's on Twitter at jimmfc, J-I-M-M-F-C. We hope you enjoy this series of shows. And to finish, something I've always wanted to say, good day.
A final guest on the show is someone who isn't a Millwall supporter. And in fact, if you look at his Twitter feed, there's no secret that he's a Derby County supporter. But some of you may remember the name, as I'd like to introduce from the ABC here in Australia, Ned Hall, formerly from BBC Radio London. So, Ned, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Absolute pleasure.
Was that right? Wikipedia sometimes can be a bad thing, but...
No, I'm fairly obvious here as a Derby fan, and I think I was probably quite lucky actually in my time working in London that no one was too bothered about the fact that I think a lot of people knew I was a Derby fan there, but it wasn't quite as contentious, I suppose, as supporting one of the London teams. So I think it's always been something I've been able to be honest about.
Yeah, so someone contacted me to say that you're obviously now living in Sydney, and you, during your time in BBC London, covered Millwall for a period of time. So I thought it'd be nice to see from an outsider's view on your, you know, what it was like following, I'll use the word following, the Lions during that time, as well as other clubs. And I always get told that being a Millwall supporter is a unique experience. So as a media and a journalist type, did you find that as well, that it's a unique club?
I actually think it is generally compared to most of the other clubs. I think most of the clubs you find around London have got their own character, but I think there's something very different and very special about Millwall and Millwall fans as well, in terms of their loyalty to the club, I think, and possibly their sort of, you know, rejection of all outsiders, and that sort of, you know, slightly more insular attitude that I think you find at most other clubs around London. I think if you're a Millwall fan, then, you know, you're locked in, and it's the sort of, you know, the way of life with that. And a good example, actually, I used to do a lot of games with Kenny Sansom, and Ken obviously played for Arsenal and Palace, but his family were all from Bermondsey. And I remember him going to one of the games, I think away at Gillingham, running into a load of lads he knew from growing up. And he got on with them really well. But he said he knew he couldn't say anything negative about Millwall, even though they might have been slagging the team off. He knew that he was in that position where he couldn't really be as critical as they were, because people are still very protective of the club, even when they've not been playing well.
Did you? I mean, this is quite interesting stuff, because, you know, do you find with your co-commentators who are normally ex-professional players that they have to be careful of what they say because they're scared, or not scared, but the repercussions could come and bite them a bit later on down the line? Or do you find that most co-commentators normally do speak their mind?
I think most people, when they're on air, will speak their mind. And I think it's that balance about not being, you know, overly critical and overly negative, or at least saying why you're saying something. So if someone's playing really badly, you know, you'll at least explain the reasoning behind it. But I think there certainly was, I think you sort of want to be critical in the right way, put it that way, and not permanently negative about something. And I think particularly with certain, you know, I think English football fans, and this is different if you're living in Australia, I think people are far more passionate about their teams and are far more likely to pull you up for it if you're critical in this day and age. To be fair as well, I was, you know, that was pre-Twitter and pre a lot of the social media age then as well. So people couldn't probably track you down quite as easily online to give you a mouthful over the keyboard as they can do these days.
So your covering of Millwall for BBC London started, what, around about the year 2000, was it, yeah, you think?
Yeah, I joined BBC London around that time then, and I joined at the tail end of when one of the football deals, where they'd lost out on a lot of the Premier League clubs. So they'd invested heavily, I think, in a lot of the sides who weren't in the Premier League at that time and got good relationships with them. And so they'd got a good relationship with Millwall. And I think over the years, various different community events and different people at the club, they'd always got on very well with them. And so I think that was one of the good reasons why we got on board with Millwall. And obviously getting promoted in that 2000-2001 season as well, going up around that time, yeah, and being such a good team, I think that was one of the things that really helped in terms of getting a lot more people behind them, because I think Millwall games were always very exciting. It was a really good team around then as well. I mean, when I was just, when we talked about having a chat, and I was thinking, I refresh my memory about the teams, thinking I knew most of the players, and literally it all came flooding back straight away. What a good team and what exciting players there were in that era.
That 2000-2001 season where, as you say, we won the old Division 2, Mark McGee manager there, and that was really when you had players like Tim Cahill that was probably almost at their peak there, and Neil Harris was banging goals in, Stephen Reid, Paul Ifor. I mean, it was certainly a team that people remember. Tony Warner in goal as well. A lot of people have said that season was one of their favourite seasons, you know, and then to obviously go up into Division 1, which the following year, we nearly made it into the Premier League, if you remember, but we lost out to Birmingham City in the playoffs. So it was certainly two very good years.
I think you've just gone through the players there. I think what was great about that side, and I think that's probably one of the managerial highlights of Mark McGee's career as well, the football they were playing, the way they approached the game, the overall, I suppose, the balance that side had with those named players there as well. You know, Tony Warner, great goalkeeper, solid centre-halves who basically were old-fashioned centre-halves, and, you know, the likes of, you know, Dyche and Nethercott playing alongside each other for most of the time. You mentioned, you know, Timmy Cahill, and there was the, you know, Neil Harris and Claridge and Sadley when they were there. It's a really good team, really good team. And I used to get a lot of enjoyment about going to watch them. Like they weren't a dull, grinding side. They'd go out there, they'd entertain, and they had, you know, good attacking footballers. So, you know, the atmosphere in those days at the Den as well was superb. So it was a really, really nice period to have been covering their games.
So as going there as a journalist in your like professional capacity, and obviously now, is there a big difference between interaction between players and media than there is now? Or, I mean, I read that it's a lot harder to even get a talk to a player these days. So was it back then a lot easier, and were players more open to talking to you guys?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I think they were, and I think, you know, it was interesting the way a lot of different clubs set things up. I remember back then going down to Millwall, you used to have to sort of wander down to the training ground and hang around off, you know, whilst they were training and almost grab players as they were coming off. Whereas a lot of clubs now, just the way it works, you literally go down to training ground, they'll stick you in a room somewhere and you'll be waiting there and you don't get near the players, which is a real shame because there was, again, great talkers and great characters in that era as well. And, you know, you wonder whether some of these people would have come across in the same way in this day and age if you're not letting them go out and just have a chat and just be themselves and talking to the media. But most of that side then were all good talent, good for a chat, and always used to give you something as well, which is a shame now that you don't get that option time to go and just sit down and talk to the players. I mean, it's maybe slightly different in Australia with a smaller league that's sort of crying out for, you know, a bit of publicity. But the, you know, even examples I've had from this year of going out to clubs in Sydney, and I know the people at the clubs pretty well, but somehow you're almost kept at your distance from the players, which is a bit of a shame because, again, they're all fine. If you actually get down to talk to them and put a microphone under them, they're all generally pretty happy to have a chat.
Yeah, and you mentioned they're like living in Sydney, and you also do a podcast. You still the Fighting Talk or the boot room, isn't it? Sorry, on the ABC Grandstand podcast. It must be quite tough to do podcasts at the moment.
it's very tough. I've been locked up for the best part of 3 weeks since going away overseas, and my wife then coming back a week after me. So we've been homebound for that time. And my friend Chris Glassick, who's a Sunderland fan, he's been in work, but now on leave as well. So we've been finding it a bit hard to actually get in a place where we can actually record things properly. So we've had it on ice for a couple of weeks. And, yeah, it's pretty difficult to actually get anything done properly these days.
So when you talk about the football scene over in Sydney, is that with Sydney FC and, you know, and Western Sydney Wanderers in the A-League, or do you go around looking at all the NPL, New South Wales NPL teams as well?
I do tend to just do the A-League because of the fact that I suppose when, you know, one of the things you have with working in sports media is you're generally working weekends anyway, so I don't tend to get a lot of other time away from that to go out and just check out other games, which is a shame because it's a really vibrant scene, I think, below the A-League level, which is something that people have struggled for over here is because of the ethnic background in a lot of these clubs. That you've got, you know, your Serbian clubs, your Croatian clubs, your Greek clubs in Melbourne, that they tried to sort of move that away from the game, but I think they've lost a lot of their, you know, original supporters and background, and these clubs are still very well supported and very strong all around the country. And it's a shame they haven't really managed to capture that passion and get it into the A-League quite the same way. I mean, some of the Sydney derbies, going back a few years, were superb occasions. They were fantastic. They'd get huge crowds, great atmosphere as well, noise all the way through them. But yeah, they really need, I think, to sort of get that NPL sort of passion for the game where people are just there for the love of it rather than the some of the stuff you get in the A-League now.
Yeah, and it's the same over in Perth here. We've got teams that are, you know, we've got like teams like Inglewood United that used to be called Inglewood Kiev. Perth Soccer Club used to be Perth Italia. So, you know, again, the ethnic background of some of these clubs. But when you go to these places, it's still very strong and it's still good. And So everyone's really missing that live football Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, watching a game of some description. So A-League then, what's it's looks like it could be coming a bit messy over the next few months now, with, you know, obviously Perth Glory have basically put all their players on notice, haven't they? Other teams have as well. The television deal, you know, looking very dubious. What do you reckon on the A-League future?
Look, I'm actually not that pessimistic about it, because I think there's bigger underlying problems in Australia with the sporting landscape and everything else. And I think Fox Sports, who are the major bankrollers of a lot of Australian sports for a long time now, financially, they're really struggling. And they were struggling before the whole coronavirus issue came up. And they were looking to cut back in so many areas. They cut back a lot of their football commentary staff as well, and scaled back a lot going into this season. So I think they were almost looking for a bit of a way out themselves. And I don't think they were giving the game an awful lot of support, just the way they've been looking after it the past few years. And the big difference in Australia compared to, say, in England and most of the European countries is football isn't the dominant code in terms of what's shown on TV, despite the fact that more people play it than any other sport. It still struggles for airtime. It struggles for a bit of space in the media. So I honestly think it might do the game some good that somebody else may come in. And I know everyone keeps looking to Optus, who are obviously a pay TV channel that they've got there, which has got the Premier League on now, that they might become the home of football. They've done a really good job in the coverage of the Premier League, the actual shows they do, the people they have on there. Have it on there and on a terrestrial channel. I think it could actually work out for the better in the long run. I think it's going to be a big spell of difficulty, but I think they might have to rely on overseas and digging into the coffers of FIFA a little bit to help them out in the short term. But I honestly think it's a good chance for them to start again and maybe even look at putting a second division in place, because at the moment, with just 11 professional teams in this country and then one more to come in from next season, whenever that actually is, I actually think that they might have the opportunity to restructure the game without Fox Sports being the only funder of the competition. So, look, I'm maybe being sort of looking at it a bit more optimistically than I should be, but I'm quite confident that they can come out of this and actually restructure the game and be okay with it long run.
And so let's go back to the English game now, and obviously living over here, big time differences. How do you keep up to date with football in the UK and, you know, your Derby County as well?
It's been really hard, and in fact, over this year, I've watched fewer games than I've watched for a long, long time. Mostly because of how badly we've been doing. But you know, in the past, you can generally get online and stream them. They've been on them, you know, through the pay TV subscriptions and get it on the laptop basically and sit and watch them on there, which is generally what I've always had to do. But a lot of the time then as well, you know, you're not getting every single game being streamed on that all the time. And so my wife understands to a degree, but not quite to the full extent. So I'm not up watching them all the time, but luckily I've got passionate supporting family back at home as well. So I generally find that as soon as I'm awake, that I've got floods of messages filling me on everything if I'm not set up to watch a match. So, it's always tricky with that time difference, because you've got to sort of make the call to say, do I want to be getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to sit and watch a game where I'm not particularly fancying our chances? So, and this year's been tough.
Yeah. I've actually been quite happy with this year, but the last couple of years for me has been I'll press the red button and watch it at some point. And then you wake up in the morning, see the score, and you go, oh, I'll delete it. I won't even bother.
That's exactly it. It's been tricky. And I think, obviously, the interesting thing is that, I don't think we're too far off playing Millwall again at some point this year. I think we've done pretty poorly against Millwall this season. I know you came and beat us at Derby earlier on, which was, disappointing for us. But I think you're doing a lot better than we have been doing this year. And so it's good to see Millwall at in the right half of the table this season.
Yeah, it certainly makes a change, and it is nice. It's nice knowing, I mean, even I still work out, are we safe from relegation? And I think most Millwall supporters, that's the first thing they work out is, are we going down? You know, have we got enough points? So while you were at BBC London and covering Millwall, do you have any like memorable moments, watching the Lions play?
I remember that when the cup tie with Liverpool, I think, think was a really enjoyable night as well. I know Liverpool came down there, and it was a very sort of fiery night down there at the Den. But that one really sticks in my mind because of the absolutely packed crowd that it was at that time. Just the real sort of the noise all around the stadium. That was a really big night there, I remember, and really enjoyed just the atmosphere in the stadium at that time. That one was great. I've got another one that always jumps into my mind, and I think it's because of being out here in Australia, of watching, I'm sure Kevin Muscat was there as well at one stage, and an away game at Watford where he, for no reason whatsoever, stamped on somebody's leg, just like randomly off the ball and got sent off and basically lost the game for Millwall. That one always really stands out in my mind of just thinking, I don't know why he did it. And I think Millwall were in a good situation at the time. They'd gone there, I think, early on in the season, and he got sent off virtually on the stroke of half time. And again, they're actually looking in pretty good shape. I can't remember who it was. He just stamped on someone's leg, just running out of the penalty area. He was down on the floor and got a red card, which he was a very frustrating player in that sense as well. But yeah, that's one that always jumps into my mind as being sort of a moment of madness from Kevin Muscat, not the only one in his career. But yeah, that was great. And I think I also remember going down and doing a game at Cardiff where they won by a few goals one December. And that was a good night down there as well. Really good performance when Dennis Wise was in the side. And they played really, really well that night. And I just remember that one standing out as well. Just been such a good performance. And thinking that season, which I think would have been 2003-2004, I thought there were a good chance that year of going on and doing something as well with the side that they had at that time.
Well, I think what that happened that year was obviously we got to the cup final, so I think that probably put the Mockers on the promotion charge because we were doing quite well. And then obviously, you know, we were recording this on the 5th of April and yesterday was the anniversary of us beating Sunderland at Old Trafford in the semi-final, so I think the cup final was probably the reason why we didn't go on that year and where we probably should have done.
I think that was it. I think after the Sunderland game, there weren't many wins in the league after that. Well, I think the form dipped away a lot.
I'm actually just looking at the history book now that season, and the 24th of March, we beat Wimbledon away 1-0, which would have been at the hockey stadium up in Milton Keynes. And then we never won another game until we beat Bradford 1-0 in the very last game of the season. So yeah, the form going into the cup final was never going to be one to scare Man United, I don't think.
But it's funny because, I mean, that season, you know, it's one of those odd ones, isn't it? Like, it was great to go and experience that all the way through to the cup final and, you know, especially as a non-Premier League side to go on a run like that. But on the other side of it, when you look at it and think, oh, you know, that could have been the promotion winning side that year. It was a really good team, I think. And to miss out and the way they did with the form dropping away running into the final was just a bit of a blow.
Yeah. And so and also then, and this is always asked, you know, I always wonder this, was there anything that someone told you when you was covering the club that you went, oh, and you weren't allowed to mention in broadcasting, but it always, you know, comes, you know what I mean? Was there anything that someone said, oh, did you know that? And you really?
Do you know what? I don't think there was as such down at Millwall. And I used to, you know, I used to go on very well with the guys who ran the club website commentary as well.
Yeah,
which would have been, you know, Dino Stanley and the guys there. Yeah. And so, yeah, we used to sort of, you know, I think we had a good idea then at the time of what the lay of the land in and around the club and about what you could and couldn't say at those times. So I don't think I ever had any big dramas with that around that period of time. So, no, I think, it was always a pretty, for me, I think, and because we were BBC London, we were always very welcomed down there, and I think we knew sort of our places, being able to be positive about the club all the time as well, even when they're playing against other London teams.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot here, but while watching the Lions, did you have the one player that you go, well, two questions, the one player that you go, wow, he's probably one of the best players I've seen wearing a Millwall shirt, and on the flip side, the one player that you think, why on earth is he playing?
In terms of the players, obviously, like you know, having seen Tim Cahill there, obviously, it would stand out. Yeah. However, I used to love the fact of him and Eiffel and Reid. I think Paul Eiffel, I think we got to see him when he was in some of his better days there. Yeah. I think he was a fantastic player for the club at that time. And I really enjoyed going to watch him because you always thought he was going to go and do something in a match when you were watching. And I'm trying to think about anybody else who they really didn't do a lot. I'm trying to think, maybe I remember Bob Peters was there for a while, the big Belgian striker, who again, one of those players who was really frustrating because he was massive and he never really used to seem to put himself about enough, which always drives me mad. When you see a great big centre forward
who can't hit the ball,
necessarily get stuck into people. Yeah, can't hit the ball, doesn't really get stuck into people, doesn't shove them around. I remember him being very frustrating. When you had other guys who had been playing up front around that time, who would be half his size but would throw themselves around and make the most of it. I remember he used to drive me a bit mad, to be honest, watching him play.
I can assure you that Bob Peters, that's not the only nomination he's had in various interviews just recently as well. So but it was good times, that early 2000 years until, you know, maybe 2005, after the cup final, it also went a little bit sour. You know, with the I think money. Was that around the ITV deal that broke down as well around then? And was that earlier?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit. I think you're right. I think it was always sort of on. But Millwall were never, even with Theo Bofitis there at the time, they were never going to be big spenders. And no. I think there was a few of the people came in and came over the top of them maybe and did throw a bit of money around. Whereas Millwall had always been producing good players and picking up some good deals along the way as well. So I think that was probably, it's hard to keep up there all the time when you're doing that. Like, you've got every purchase you make has got to be a good one. And if you have a few bad ones, all of a sudden your team's a lot weaker. So, yeah, I think that was probably hard to sustain over that period of time.
Yeah, and obviously not being one of the biggest clubs in London, then the financials come into it, really. And But I always say we have 7 years of famine and 7 years of feast. So it's never it's never usually a dull moment supporting Millwall, even from this far away. So, Nick, thanks for taking time out in your schedule. And I know yesterday you were saying you were doing reruns of cricket commentaries on the radio and things like that. And it was good to get an England win on a radio for a change. And
Exactly. Well, it's not deliberate scheduling, really, but there's been a lot of Australian defeats played at the moment than there might have been if I wasn't scheduling them. But as long as it's England wins as well, there'll be a few more of those to come, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks.
Glad to hear it. I'll listen out even more for them. So, again, thanks for your time. Thanks. It's been really great talking to a professional. I can stop shaking now as the amateur of this conversation. And
It's been good fun.
Thanks a lot, mate, and hopefully we'll catch up sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Yeah, take care.
Cheers. Thanks, Ned. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. Bye. Bye.